Here we go!
To the video game show on URN.
Hello and welcome to the video game show. I am your today's host, Henry. And it's been quite the hiatus, guys. It's been 2 weeks since I was last on the show.
We missed you, man. Yeah,
3 weeks. I've really missed you guys. So it's great to be back. But today, I'm joined by...
Hey, nice to meet you. I'm Dylan. Nice to meet you. Nice to see you, even. That's how long it's been, Henry.
I know, it's been a while, hasn't it?
I forget who he was.
I bet you recognise Dylan. And how are you, Mark?
I'm doing okay. I'm over here with my headphones on. I feel like a proper DJ.
Yeah, we're a proper pro today.
I'll start remixing in a bit. It'll be great.
And we've also joined by, obviously, the pleasurable Jack Newman.
Thank you very much for having me.
Don't know why I said pleasurable, but...
we've missed you here. It's been me, Mark and Dylan for the last couple of weeks. So yeah, we're glad to have you back.
We're back.
We also had Dom on last week.
Yeah, we had our Pokemon correspondent in the studio.
Good old Dom. No, the Dream Team is back. First up, there's a new Titanfall 2 update out. And apparently... Dylan likes Titanfall. I mean, have you played it?
Given it a bit of a go. I mean,
what's this Titanfall thing, man?
I've never heard about it. I don't really know what's going on with it. But yeah, there's a DLC out. Maybe.
Oh yeah, what's that? Yeah.
Anyway, so it's I think we mentioned it before. The Titanfall 2, they've made a big change for this. And one of the changes for this new game was they wanted to keep DLC free because it really split the player base before. And so it's not as big as the old DLC was. So you got one map with this new one, which was actually just a map from Titanfall 1. But it's pretty good. It's one of the favourite maps.
Like, a map at a time when they're free.
When they're free,
is
brilliant.
Yeah, it's not too bad.
You also get a new weapon, which again, from Titanfall 1. And then there's a few upgrades to each Titan. There's like a different ability they can have that we didn't have before. Just sort of small stuff like that, but it's kind of nice to see that, because it's free, it's... And it came out so quickly as well.
The game's been out for like a month, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's amazing, right?
So
exactly.
They, even if just for like another 6 months, they give you some more stuff. Yeah. That's a really hefty chunk of content for free. So that's wicked.
They also introduced this thing. So they've got an in-game store now, and it was worrying a few people. But what it is it's obviously only things like skins, and there's no RNG or anything, or loot boxes, which obviously...
Oh, really? So it's not doing like... It's still got burn cards, though, right?
No, burn cards don't exist.
Oh, really?
They kind of do. You get boosts, which are slightly different to burn cards,
okay,
but you can't buy any of this stuff anymore.
Because the first one had like a loot boxy style system to it, where you'd get cards, wouldn't you?
Yeah, but you don't get that at all anymore. So the store is purely... You can get like 10 skins for £4 or something. You can get sort of new skins and assassinations for your Titans. Really all completely aesthetic stuff, and you only get what you want. You're never buying just some random thing.
Cool.
And it's they're doing pretty good.
Oh, nice one, yeah.
I'm liking what Respawn are doing with the game.
Mm. Good stuff, that's
right. Those guys are good guys.
Yeah.
Good pedigree, talented people. They make good games.
We like them.
I'm on board.
So also, there's been a bit of Pokemon Sun and Moon chat going on. Jack, you've got a bit of a...
Yeah, so it's been out for a couple of weeks now, and from what I understand, they're going to be doing something called Global Events, where all players from all around the world can get involved, and the first event that they've got on at the moment runs until December the 13th, and the challenge for everyone who's playing it worldwide is for them to catch 100 million Pokemon cumulatively. So between all of the players around the world, their goal by December the 13th is to have caught 100 million Pokemon altogether. Now, that may sound like...
Is that since the challenge started, or just in total?
Just by December the 13th. It might be during that time frame. I think it started on maybe.
So do we know how? Like, is there a place we can go to see how many they've caught already?
Yeah, it's like a timer or something.
I'm not too sure. I mean, okay. I imagine that would be something that they'd probably set up in the next couple of days if they want to. But
yeah, that's crazy.
I mean, it sounds like a large number, but in the first 2 weeks of sales, they sold 3.7 million copies. Worldwide. So when you think about it, really, it's only about 30 Pokemon each, and you hit your 100 million target. So if everyone gets involved, I'm not saying that everyone will get involved.
That would involve probably like the 80% of people who stop playing that game and start playing that game again.
To be fair, like, I don't know about you guys, but when I play Pokemon, I normally just catch, you know, 7 or 8 Pokemon, and you keep that squad with you for the entire time. You know, I'm not really one to collect the entirety of the Pokedex, so I'm
the entire point of the game, man.
Yeah, I know it is, but when you play Pokemon, you build up such a relationship with your Pokemon.
You've got to catch them all.
You've got to have a grip.
If they do manage to complete this ginormous feat, then what they do is they get everyone who's participated in it gets 1,000 festival coins, and if they don't manage to complete it, you still get 100 festival coins, which is just for owning the game, just for participating, just for turning the game on
before December the 13th.
Yeah,
brilliant.
If you turn on the global link, go online, catch Pokemon, then yeah.
Cool.
Good stuff. Nice one.
That game seems awesome, man.
Yeah. I still haven't got it. I'm sort of restraining myself to get it because I'm a massive Pokemon fan. Yeah,
Hope someone gets it for you for Christmas, I guess.
Yeah.
I'm hoping Santa will get me that.
Yeah, no, definitely. Yeah,
but that game seems really cool.
The new Death Stranding trailer.
Which we've actually got a question about.
Go on.
So we've got a question here that says, what do you think of the Death Stranding trailer? Or more generally, the direction Hideo Kojima seems to be taking.
I know that you, Mark, and Dylan were having a sort of, not, I wouldn't say heated debate, but you guys were having a very, very in-depth discussion in our little Facebook chat that we had going yesterday.
Yeah, I have some strong feelings about Hideo Kojima. Yeah. And Death Stranding and Metal Gear Solid and some other things, as is recorded on this very radio show. There's a record of me talking very passionately about Metal Gear Solid. I don't know how I feel about the Death Stranding trailer.
It looks really weird, doesn't it?
It is very weird. It's like,
I don't know what to make of it. I mean,
but I don't think that's the problem you have, isn't it? It's not that it's weird.
I think it looks really cool, and I love Kojima, and he's got weirder than this before and it worked out really, really well. Yeah. So like, I'm not worried it's going to be too weird or anything. I think it's really cool. I like where it's going, but I hate that this game was announced 6 months ago when it didn't even have an engine. Six months later now, where they've only just got an engine, there's barely a game there.
We've got two trailers.
Yeah, he's hyping it up even more. It's getting more and more insane, and we don't know what this game is going to be. Yeah. Apart from he said at some point, I think it's going to be a video game, which is, you know, good of him.
Some places are saying it's an open world action adventure game.
That's what I had heard. Yeah, like that's
broad.
That would be the logical extension of Metal Gear Solid 5.
Yeah.
Like to see what he's been trying to do with Metal Gear for so long, since 4 and then Peace Walker into 5. Mm-hmm. It would make sense for him to make a kind of open, especially as well, because that was sort of his vision for Silent Hills too. Like he wants an open world you can explore, but
there's not enough about it.
There's not a lot.
I can't get on board with the trailer because there's, even though, so it's rendered in engine and on a PlayStation and all this other stuff, and that's super cool. And I'm super hyped for it. It looks wicked, but I want to know what that game is before I actually give more of myself to it.
Because first I was saying I was saying how I thought it looked cool, but then you pointed out to me in this chat we had. But it's like I hadn't thought at all. But he only really has had a chance to work on this for a year at most.
Unless he was just working on it whilst he was still
maybe, but that's,
you're right, like it hasn't been long.
There's no way that there's enough of a game to be really giving out trailers at this point when an open world action adventure game, as it were, is going to take, some of them take like 5 to 10 years, like Final Fantasy, 5 to 10 years to make, and he's already got two trailers.
So if we had to guess, I mean, it's very early days, but if you thought this game was going to come out, when do you think it might?
Well, I said I think it's going to be 2019.
I was about to say 2019.
I was going to say late 2018.
My guess was holiday 2018.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, because I figured next E3 they'll give a story trailer.
Yeah.
E3 after would be a gameplay kind of thing,
and then
it would
Christmas.
Be within the year
I think
after
that's
that.
Fair, actually. Yeah.
So either Christmas or soon following.
Yeah, I think that's reasonable.
But then again, it could be even longer.
Yeah,
really.
But the reason I'm saying like 2018 is because I don't want to have to wait.
Yeah.
Like I want to see what that game is.
Make it come true.
But also, I mean, there's part of me that thinks that maybe Sony are going to want a faster return on their investment because buying Kojima wasn't cheap, especially because when Kojima left Konami, he didn't take like the rest of his team with him, and yet those guys have all come over. So I imagine Sony had to do some stuff there to try and make Konami not make it very, very difficult for them to take over, like Yoji Shinkawa and like all those people, like Kojima's art team and stuff.
We are going to talk about the big news. Now, recently, we had the Game Awards. This is a massive deal in LA. And basically, this is where we go for our yearly roundup of all the best games coming out. And we are going to dissect it with some serious objectivity on the show. We're going to start with best performance. Okay, so in this, we've got Mafia 3, Firewatch, Uncharted. Has anyone played the new Uncharted?
I haven't. I really, really want to. I've heard it's super awesome. I might be trying to get it for Christmas.
Yeah, I'd definitely play it. I'm basically three guesses. The winner was Nolan North. You know?
Nolan North is, he's pretty great.
He's the pinnacle of video game acting along with
Troy Baker.
Troy Baker.
Kanji Tatsumi!
I know, I disgraced myself, really.
Right, okay, I'm going to go for best action game. So, up for the nominees, we've got Battlefield 1, Doom, Gears of War 4, Overwatch, Titanfall 2. Who do you reckon won, guys? Although I mean, I
can see who won. Jack's
got it up on the screen. I've got it up on the screen.
But
yeah.
We should discuss what we think would be the best.
I'm going to guess Doom.
I think you would have said that anyway.
Yeah, Doom's the best game on that list, just saying.
No, to be fair, I mean, from what I've seen of Doom, it is
Doom's
yeah.
so
awesome
good.
Game.
Like, it looks insane.
You've played some Doom, haven't you, Jack?
Yeah, I have. It's absolutely insane.
Incredible video game.
Yeah.
Henry, you've played Battlefield 1, right? So what do you think that maybe deserved?
I was saying earlier, actually, Battlefield 1 is only one. Actually, in fact, I haven't seen anything on here that it has won. I'm surprised it didn't get nominated and win something, because I think because it's doing World War One, you know, that's different. It's quite brave territory for video games, you know, and so respectfully and so successfully do that. I really thought that that might have a chance, actually, because although obviously Doom is cracking game, as you said, like, it looks well designed, it's incredible art style.
I think another thing about Doom that I think might actually put it above all of these is, like, new Battlefield game is going to be a Battlefield game, makes it it works well, like Gears of War 4. People saw that, they sort of knew it was going to be Gears of War. Sure. Same with Overwatch, there was like a Blizzard first person shooter, like, not sure about that, but you assume it's going to be okay. Whereas Doom has been in development hell since 2004 when Doom 3 came out. Doom, the original Doom 4 was a gritty, like, modern military shooter in like a war torn city, and everything was brown and miserable. So, like, Doom is incredible almost because for so long it's looked like it's going to be really bad, and then that beta multiplayer beta came out and it looked like it was going to be really bad, and then Bethesda didn't even send out review copies,
so nobody
had a clue what was going to happen with that game, and then it came out and was incredible.
We were going to do best action adventure game now, so we've got Dishonored 2, Hitman, Hyper Light Drifter, Ratchet and Clank, and Uncharted 4.
I'm really annoyed that I've seen this now, because in the Black Friday sales, Hyper Light Drifter was super cheap.
Hyper Light Drifter, it looks really, really cool. I've seen some bits from it. It's a really stylish game, Hyper Light Drifter.
I looked at it and it was like, that looks pretty cool, but I can't really buy a game now. I've got so much work to do.
It's really irritating. I bought Dishonored 2 literally the day it came out, and then a week later, it's £12 cheaper. And I was like, the winner of this action adventure category was Dishonored 2, and that is a game I have actually played. So,
what do you think of it?
I've only played the first two levels. However, I've probably spent about 5 hours doing that, and I definitely feel like I'm doing it wrong. However, it's so detailed that I just spend all my time looking at books and kind of teleporting out walls and kind of looking at everything that I'm not sure they really intended to have everything looked at. But basically, the game is unbelievably detailed. Yeah. And obviously, for those who don't know, Dishonored is a game where you're an assassin, basically, and you go through these big sort of sandbox levels. And it's kind of open world in the sense that you can do whatever you want in the level, and there are side quests within that mission, and you're trying to assassinate someone ultimately at the end of the thing.
Or you can
get rid of them by making them go work in a coal mine or something. Next category we can move on to is best RPG. I think we're pretty big RPG fans on this show.
I find this category funny.
I quite like the winner of this. So we've got Dark Souls 3, Deus Ex, Mankind Divided. We've got The Witcher 3, Wild Hunt, Blood and Wine DLC.
Which came out, was that June?
Yeah, it was June, wasn't it? And we have World of Warcraft Legion, which was meant to be phenomenal. And Xenoblade, is that how you say it? Xenoblade Chronicles X on Wii U. And the winner was The Witcher 3, Wild Hunt, Blood and Wine DLC.
This is what me and Dylan were talking about earlier. We were saying, how can a DLC be out all of these games?
To be fair, it's the DLC for the Video Game Awards favourite game of last year.
So
to be fair, it is an incredible game. I have not played this DLC yet.
I haven't even finished the first part.
It just goes to show how well made The Witcher is. That a DLC for it, which I suppose is meant to be adding what 30 hours of gameplay after
it adds an area about the size of Skellige,
which is huge for a new game, and it's
all unique quests and everything, none of it links back into the main story, it's literally like its own 30 hour side story.
So it makes sense that it was eligible to it's just brilliant that a DLC was the best RPG of the year, and it won best RPG of the year. That should show to the listeners that haven't played Witcher 3
why we love Witcher 3 so much. And play that game,
because that's how good it is.
Obviously, multiplayer. We've got Battlefield 1, Gears of War 4, Overcooked,
Overcooked is really, really good.
Never heard of it.
Overcooked is really cool.
Do
you want to explain about what it is, Mark?
Overcooked is a four-player cooking game where you each play as a chef in a kitchen that's like a different shape, and like orders come up and it'll say something like you need a burger with cheese and lettuce, so then you have to go to get the cheese and the lettuce and the burger bits and you put it all together, but you also have to wash the plates up, and then you also have to manage cooking and make sure things don't burn. But the idea is there's always one more job than there are people playing, and it could be up to four players, so it requires everyone to be working together. And there are some kitchens that are split down the middle, so they can't cross, so two people have to be like in charge of one area and the two people have to be in charge of another.
So it's like Kitchen
area.
Simulator 2016.
Yeah, it's cooking with your family, a really cool game. And then there are crazy kitchens that are on things like a pirate ship that's rocking back and forth, so everything keeps sliding around as you're trying to make food.
That sounds really fun actually.
It's a really, really cool like local multiplayer game.
But yeah, best multiplayer, we've got Battlefield 1, Gears of War 4, Overcooked, Overwatch, Titanfall 2, and Rainbow Six Siege.
Ooh. I've only played three of these ones, so I can only really talk about those. But
so the winner was Overwatch.
Obviously. I mean,
I think that's fair enough.
Overwatch is an incredible game.
Probably
the
biggest multiplayer game of the year, really.
Yeah.
Nah, yeah.
It's everywhere, and all sort of gaming communities are talking about it. It's obvious that that's going to win, because it's a brilliantly well-made game, and it's been around for a while now.
So now I'd like to go on to best independent game, and there's a game on here which I'm just gonna scream all about because I love it so much. So the nominees were Firewatch, Hyper Light Drifter, Inside, Stardew Valley, and The Witness. And I don't know if any of you played any of those games.
I've heard of Stardew Valley.
I have
heard of it. Yeah,
my brother's been playing that.
I have seen a lot of all of them, and they all look pretty cool. I haven't actually got hands on with any of them, alas. There's a few on there that I really want to play that are in my Steam wish list, but I'm aware of all of them.
The winner was Inside, which is a game about, it's quite hard to describe what it's about, but basically it's like sort of a side scroller. It's kind of 3D, and you're like a little, I think you're a boy, and you go through, I think you're trying to escape prison or something.
It goes a lot of places. If anybody's
spiritual successor to Limbo or something.
Yeah, well, if anybody's played Limbo, it's the Limbo guys. It's their next game. They've made two games. They've made Limbo and Inside. They're very similar. Inside appears to have a lot of the same care, craft, quality, and also uniqueness in it. And it shows as well that they've spent, 9 years? When did Limbo come out? Limbo was one of the first Xbox Arcade, like Summer of Arcade games, wasn't it? So that must have been, 2008?
Blimey,
So these guys have spent a lot of time making, by all accounts, if you're into really artsy platformers, it's that.
Check it out. But the other game in here, which didn't win, but I definitely should on there, was Firewatch. And this is a game by Campo Santo. And basically, this is a game that is a... It's a gorgeous open world. Well, not open world, but it's a sort of big open world in inverted commas, set in kind of Yosemite-esque area. And you play a guy called Henry. Don't know what that's about. But you play as a ranger, and you're looking out for fires in the forest, and Firewatch. And you sit in your tower, and it's very isolated, and you kind of... And basically, yeah, so you look after fires. But essentially, the game takes you on this journey of... there's mystery going on in the park, and your only person that you talk to is a girl called Delilah, who's in another tower, 10 miles away or whatever, and you talk to each other through a walkie-talkie, and throughout the game, you talk to Delilah regularly through a walkie-talkie, and you walk around the park, and you kind of clean up, but then it all starts to go a bit wrong, but it's absolutely brilliant, and I implore you, because Mark, you've got, it's out on PS4, it's on Steam as well?
Yeah, it's on Steam.
Okay,
I almost got it the other day, actually, because it was down to about £7 in a Steam sale, but I didn't, it only cost like 50, but anyway, like I will pick it up at some point, because really, really want to play it.
It's made by the makers of Telltale's Walking Dead, so it's got a really good pedigree in terms of storytelling.
Yeah, they are ex-Telltale guys, aren't they? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I implore all of you to go and play it. It is absolutely brilliant. It's quite slow.
It's experiential, isn't it? It's like Gone Home in that sort of... It's not a crazy, fast-paced thing. It's a lot of just the most wandering around and learning things, isn't it?
The most exciting thing you do is chop a tree down.
Trees are all right.
There's not a lot of gameplay, but you walk around and you do various like mundane jobs, but it's all about like the dialogue. It's absolutely brilliant. I won't spoil any of it for you, but it's just phenomenal. The ending is a bit of a letdown. Like, I finished it and I was like, okay, that was a bit annoying. Like, it was such a good build up, and then the ending is just pretty rubbish, but whatever. It's like a 5-hour game, and I played it start to finish, like, basically in one sitting. It's absolutely brilliant. Go and play it. We'll end on the game of the year. So we've got Doom, Inside, Overwatch, Titanfall 2, and Uncharted 4. And the winner was Overwatch.
Of course, yeah.
And
yeah.
It's been such a massive game this year. There's nothing really more to say about it.
It's what's going to happen.
I think that's fair enough.
Well, there are. I think all of those are deserving.
Yeah.
Because everyone like I've spoken to who's played those sort of things, those things in particular, has loved them.
Yeah, I mean, Inside, again, from what I've heard, Inside seems interesting, but I don't know if, from what I've seen of all these games, I don't know if Inside sort of... I don't think it plays with them in the same way.
It's odd that it's up there with those games, yeah.
But I guess they probably had a requirement to have, like, one independent game in there, and that's the winner of that category, so that's probably why it's in there.
I find it odd that Overwatch... Well, not that odd, you can explain it easily, but Overwatch won Game of the Year, but not Best Action Game, so it didn't win the genre.
Yeah, it's weird, that, isn't it? Because that is...
It won multiplayer.
That's its IP, right?
Yeah. But I guess that's the point, isn't it? Yeah. It's a more multiplayer shooter than an action.
I would also say that the shooting feels good in that game, but the shooting doesn't feel as good as it does in, say, Doom. Or even in, like, I've only played the first Titanfall, and I can tell you that game feels better than Overwatch. Sure. But Overwatch is rolling as a unit and team abilities and other stuff. It's the action in it is great, but it's a means to an end for a different experience.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. We're now going to come to one of my favourite features, I think, of the show, which is Hall of Game. And I missed out on video game royalty and vehicles, which I was sad to miss. But we
did get your vehicle in, though.
You did get your vehicle in. Royalty, I did struggle with, I'll be honest.
Yeah, so did we. Did you see the nominees?
But this week, we're going to do our favourite... We're not going to do video game characters. We're going to do our favourite video game controllers. Ever.
Yeah, I think it's a pretty good one. It's had us all thinking, hasn't it?
It's a very niche topic. Yeah.
We've got some crackers. So actually, just going around, I think we're going to start with you, Jack. What have you got for us?
It's one of the controllers that is sort of bizarre and out of the way. It's the bongo drums from Donkey Konga, which it was a game release on the GameCube where it's essentially a Guitar Hero-esque, but with
it's a rhythm game,
drums.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Where you have to use the Donkey Kongos.
Yeah, where you have to use the Donkey Konga drums. The left drum is the yellow icon on the screen and the right drum is the red icon on the screen. Sometimes it will want you to press them both together, so that's the pink icon, and then it's got a built-in mic so you can clap as well, which I just think is incredible. They released two games for it, Donkey Konga 1 and 2. It was something from my childhood. I remember sitting down playing that. And, you know, my hands would hurt afterwards because I was hitting it. And then I discovered that after a time, you didn't really even need to hit it that hard. You could just sort of tap it and it would still be all right. And
you're just wailing on it.
I do love the image of Jack biting away. And like,
but yeah, I mean, like I say, it's something from my childhood and I love it.
Mark, what have you got for us?
So I agonised about this. And I was trying to think of interesting ones or strange ones. And I was trying to think of ones I loved and controllers that have had an impact on me.
Spiritually.
Yeah, and... Everything impacts me spiritually, man. I'm a very sensitive person. I decided on the mouse and keyboard as my favourite video game control.
It's a reasonable one.
Yeah.
I think it might not be the most interesting or unique, but a lot of my formative video game experiences were at a mouse and keyboard. A lot of the first games I played, and a lot of the games I played the most for a very, very long time were RTSs on the PC. They were action games on the PC. Mm. They were first-person shooters on the PC. When it comes down to it, it always comes back to that. Like, I'm in a position unlike where I used to be, where I don't have to play, say, like GTA 3 on the PC with a mouse and keyboard. So I don't, it's not the perfect control scheme, but there are some things that a mouse and keyboard does better than everything else.
FPS.
Yeah, first person shooters and RTSs, man. And Red Alert 2 and Half-Life 2 are just... they're the only games I need, and so, those games take a mouse and keyboard.
Mouse keyboards that your pen and paper, Mark.
Yeah, I'm old school.
Dylan, what have you got?
Okay, so I've gone for one that, in a similar vein, one that really I had growing up. It was my controller as a kid, and it is the Mad Catz MCV 54526 Xbox original controller.
Do you want to just
this is
explain?
Its non-specific
on the show,
isn't it?
I think I mentioned
this
before.
This is that controller's second appearance on the show.
Not by code, but I've spoken about it before. And it was I loved it because the Xbox original, as we've said before, came with the Duke, the ridiculously hefty controller. One of our friends says he loves it because he had big hands as a kid. But mine, I got cramps playing that game with that controller. So this Mad Catz controller was tiny and perfect. It was a bit too small after I hit about, like, you know, 11, so I had it for like a year or whatever. But it was great. I love that controller, and that's always what I think of as a controller when I think back to them, even though I've not used it in years. I just love it.
It left its mark on you, did it?
Yeah, exactly.
What's your favourite video game controller?
Yeah, so my one is going to be, and this is the one I've had the most fun with, is going to have to be the Rock Band Stratocaster. The, you know, obviously Rock Band, the classic game, where you have drum kit, you got your guitar, and you got your microphone. And my brother and I used to sit there and have some proper jamming sessions, and I love the Stratocaster. It's awesome.
Is that the one that had the touch buttons further up the neck, so you could do like crazy tapping stuff?
I think that was a later model.
My bad.
But you had the proper keys at the top, and then you had your solo keys at the bottom. These little tiny, tiny keys with your little fingers.
It still had the solo keys.
Was one that had touch buttons for like doing hammer on and stuff.
I didn't
imagine that. I got actual guitars confused with Rock Band for a second.
But I loved it. Like, it was so intuitive, and it was so it was really responsive. And then when I played Guitar Hero, and I'm sorry, I really don't like Guitar Hero for reasons that will become clear right now. When you play Guitar Hero, there's so much lag between, and not because of when you press the key and when you actually play it, there's so much difference in time. There's a lapse in Rock Band, it's bang straight away, it's completely succinct. So Guitar Hero, absolutely rubbish, sorry.
Well, I mean, they both had their resurgence. Yeah. Guitar Hero's a bit older, isn't it?
Did Rock Band actually have a resurgence?
Yeah, well, Rock Band 4 came back after like 5 years of there not being a Rock Band game. Yeah,
we should get a band together, guys.
Rock Band 3 was like 2011.
We should definitely have one. We have like a Radio 1 live lounge type thing.
That'd be awesome. Let's do it.
With Jack on the bongos. But nah. Absolutely love it. I've had so much fun with it.
I think also before we move on, Dylan's got an honourable mention that he'd like to again, that we were talking about outside before
this blew my freaking mind.
Sure a lot of people have experienced this, but as a kid, maybe you didn't have a console, maybe you couldn't play games on your computer, but a lot of people must have played the games on the Skybox. So I want to say the Sky Remote Control.
Yeah.
Because games like Beehive Bedlam.
Beehive Bedlam, man. That's such a throwback.
Everybody who's had a Skybox or been near a Skybox has played those games.
Every year we'd go to my granddad's house for Christmas, and I remember just being bored, and then I'll sit down and play that game, everyone looking at me saying,
so
what are you doing? I'm just sat there playing Beehive Bedlam and all these other games.
Completely ruining those controllers as well. They took a beating.
You rub all the paint off them really quickly. I haven't thought about Beehive Bedlam in at least 10 years.
As terrible as it was, it was great fun.